You improve with it with insight over time. You don't gradually improve. You improve at anything when suddenly you understand a new insight on an emotional level. And that only happens once in a while. I think that that does happen no matter what the art form is that you're trying to master.
Welcome to the Behind the Scenes podcast. This is Michael Golab. Today I'm talking to Ali Kirk. Ali is an actor, comedian and magician. He's written and starred in the television series Now You See It on BBC One, Penn & Teller Fool Us on ITV One, Dirty Tricks on Channel 4 and Monkey Magic on 5, both nominated for the British Comedy Awards and the Golden Rose of Montreux. We talk about the immense power of practice. How, if you want to become better at something, you have to become worse first, the significance of making the unconscious conscious and living an examined life, how understanding the non-linear nature of improvement can help you, the importance of cultivating hope, and so much more. We also have a donation link in the show notes below now. It's called Buy Me a Coffee. If you're enjoying the podcast, we'd be immensely grateful if you could leave a very small or big one-off donation, which helps us with the maintenance cost of the whole endeavor, and just helps us continue making the podcast better. Thanks so much for your support. And now, I bring you Ali Kirk.
How are you, Ali?
I'm good, yeah. Are you all right?
I'm good, thanks. Thanks so much for joining me.
No, thanks for having me. It's been a long time since Malta.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, where you appeared in my apartment in the middle of the night.
I did appear in your apartment. So for our listeners, we're both in the obscure life of the Grand Duke of Corsica.
That's the one, yeah.
I actually had to look it up today again, although we're both in this film, because I always forget the title, because yeah, it's obscure.
It's an obscure title.
It's obscure. And we shared an apartment very briefly because you were leaving right when I arrived.
That's right, yeah.
And you left me your porridge and your honey very kindly.
And I did that because I thought if I do this, I might end up on his podcast.
Exactly. That's
it was just one of those little seeds I planted.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but we're not in any scenes together. We just shared the apartment briefly.
That was it. Completely different scenes. Mm. Yeah. It was a bit of a whirlwind for me, that project. I mean, flew in, did my scenes, boom, straight back out again. Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah. And I miss Malta. I have to say, it was a magical experience.
Malta is unbelievable, isn't it? It's the first time I'd been as well. I mean, it was just a magical place. Yeah.
Incredible. And it's so close to, it's like 3-hour flight, 4-hour flight?
Yeah, it's about 3 hours. And is it a tax haven as well, Malta?
What's
is
that?
It a tax haven?
Oh, I don't know.
I thought that's what it was. You know, a bit like Monaco, sort of places.
Maybe.
That might explain why it's so beautiful, because these sort of old buildings, and I presume rich aristocrats are living there or something. I don't know. But it was just an incredible place.
And they shoot a lot of stuff there, don't they?
They do, I think there's some crazy tax scheme if you go and film there, I believe.
Ah.
Yes, I think that's okay. Because they shot Gladiator there, is the famous one, isn't it?
Game of Thrones 2.
Game of Thrones 2?
Yeah,
apparently, yeah. I know. Yes.
Yeah. So, what do you love the most about working as an actor and magician?
Well, that's a very good question. What I love most about acting and magic is, and this is the weird reason I'm really into both, is I love practicing. I really enjoy practicing. So as a magician, the joy comes from learning, to be honest. And as an actor, I'm a bit of a loser in that I actually enjoy rehearsing, and I really enjoy just doing it and doing it and doing it and doing it. That's where I get pleasure. I'm also a little bit on the spectrum in that I can do the same thing for hours and hours, and I only get happier as I do it. So I have a very high boredom threshold. I like to do the same thing over and over again.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah. So that is, I know it's an unusual answer. I've thought about this for years, but that is why I enjoy doing both, I think.
So do you find that you get better and better with every take?
Yeah. Now, I know that's a controversial view.
Mm.
But I feel as though I have a lot of my actor friends that are like, they need that freshness of just sort of being in the moment and doing it and hitting it. I certainly have times when that's the case, but I feel like the more I do it, the more I sort of discover little nuggets that they seem to just come out of nowhere, and they come out of nowhere just because I'm so in control of it, because I've mastered it. There's a writer in Magic who said a similar thing, a guy called Darwin Ortiz, who said that the ability to improvise comes because you know exactly what you are doing, so that you don't panic if something new comes up, basically.
It's funny, I feel similarly that's why I miss the rehearsal process in when you film stuff.
Yes, yeah.
Because, yeah, I also find that I get better with the more takes you do, because I find more freedom within the boundaries and within the stuff that we've already done.
Yeah.
It kind of gives you a weird confidence and a weird kind of, it's you inhabit the world in a very different way than when it's just like fresh, now do something.
And I think that's quite a skill in of itself, particularly with TV, when you get very few takes and you're sort of expected to be right on top of your game, and it's like 7 in the morning, everyone's just had their breakfast and they're like, go on then, bang, you know, this is a scene where you get shot, and all these sort of things are against you. I was in a sci-fi film and I'd just been shot and I was meant to be crying my eyes out, and the cameraman was in front of me drinking a Starbucks, talking to his mate, and then he farted pretty much in my face. Then we had to go for a take. And it's those sort of weird things that people, those sort of sheer amount of distractions that no one's used to, but those things are always happening, and because of all of that, I do like to rehearse a lot, so that when I turn up on set and I have to do it, I've done it so many times in so many different ways that I just feel totally comfortable.
What advice would you give to your younger self?
What advice would I give to my younger self? I think to worry less, and particularly to worry less about what other people think of you. And I know that's such like an old cliche.
It's funny because most guests actually say that.
Really?
And I'm like, how do you worry less?
How do you worry less? I know. You I think you worry less after having made a lot of errors and realizing that no one gives a shit.
Okay.
I think Marcus Aurelius said in the Meditations, I'm the emperor of Rome, and yet still nobody gives a shit. You know, he couldn't believe that he was the most powerful man in the world, and still no one was really that bothered. Everyone's just completely bothered about themselves and their own problems. Yeah. And we're all doing the same thing. We're all obsessively worrying what someone else thinks, and everyone's doing that themselves, so they're not really thinking about you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it kind of helps to take a different perspective from the outside and not just your own, let's call them little problems or whatever it is, or even big problems, but zooming out can
And then Ricky Gervais has a good quote, doesn't he, which is that you're going to be dead soon, so don't you know, within 70 years if things go really well, so I think that's a sort of a nice little reminder, really. But I think that most of the things I've ever worried about, they've just never turned out to be that bad at all. And I think you only learn that from just life, really.
So it's experience, life experience, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think Mark Twain said something similar, I've had a lot of problems, most of them never happened, or something like that.
Yeah, he said it was, I think I've had thousands of problems, and two or three of them actually came true.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. So, good old Mark. You can always rely on Mark Twain for a brilliant quote. It's a shame we didn't really give it justice that day.
Yeah, we did. It was terrible. Yeah. Next time.
I think it was Mark Twain who said something like, don't worry.
Connecting to that, do you have a letting go ritual? Anything you do to find peace at the end of a stressful day? Do you meditate?
Now that does tie in with, I used to be dreadful at letting go, even to the point with when I first started doing stand-up, if I had a bad gig, I would come home and be down on myself maybe for like 3 days. And I remember doing one gig in a small pub in Islington to like 20 people and just getting like no reaction. And then I just felt like shit for 3 days. I felt awful. And then I remember going back there and then the guy went, "Oh, you were so good last time." And I was like, and then I actually realized it is the worst comedy club in the world and no one goes well. And then you suddenly realize that these are some of the things that you just encounter. Actually, that might tie into the worrying less, is that I think stand-up is a great process, because it doesn't matter how good a comedian you are, everyone storms some and everyone dies at another show. And I've seen the best of the best die, and I've seen very mediocre acts storm it. And also, each night you never know how it's going to go. And once you've done your first sort of Edinburgh Festival, where one night you'll storm it, the next night you'll die on your ass, the next night you'll storm it, you get used to riding that wave. And then you realise that really you just get better from the sheer volume of gigs over time. But you're not always going to be great. Some nights are just going to be tough and there's nothing you can do. So I think ultimately that's how I've got over a lot of sort of fears.
So it's experience again, yeah.
Yeah, experience, particularly with stand-up. Stand-up's so vulnerable.
Yeah.
It's much more, much more vulnerable than, say, being a magician or acting.
Is it?
Far more, yeah. Yeah, because in acting, you're hiding behind a brilliant playwright's lines. You know, in stand-up, you've written those lines. And, you know, whose lines do I have more confidence in, Shakespeare's or my own? So it's like...
Or Mark Twain's,
yeah. Exactly, yeah. If I have to do Mark Twain's lines, I'm very confident. But if I have to do my own jokes, it's a whole different ball game. So that's one way I got over fear, but that took 9 years of doing it to build that confidence, I would say, yeah. The first nine years were tough. Yeah.
And you definitely have to put the work in, obviously. You can't just skip it. You can't do it in 2 or 3 years.
There's no way that no one's funny on stage naturally. Some people have funny bones, but then they have to learn to harness that. And it takes 4 years to just even understand what you're doing. Yeah, I would say, yeah. And then out of that 4 years, from that 4 years, there'll be two or three people in each generation who are very good. And the rest are all at a very high level. I think to even get to a paid stand-up gig, you've got to be good, even to get to a paid gig, yeah. But as for a letting go ritual, I learned a few things. I did once meet a Buddhist guy who said to me, there used to be this Buddhist centre in Bethnal Green where I lived, and they did have a meditation class there, and I did used to go to it. And the guy who ran it, and I was telling him about sort of disappointments with shows and stuff. And he said, allow yourself to be disappointed, but then put a timer on it. Because he said people often end up being disappointed for a long time because they never fully go there. They allow themselves to be a bit disappointed, but not fully disappointed. And his idea was, let yourself feel really disappointed for an evening, but the next day, it's over. And I thought that was an interesting way of looking at it. My other way of dealing with things is I'm quite a believer in hobbies. Uh-huh. So that one of the reasons, that I enjoy doing magic is that I just enjoy learning tricks. I just happen to do it for a living as well. And I find that I can get lost in my hobbies and I get a lot of pleasure just from that. And I find that very distracting from any everyday worry, really. Yeah. And I feel like we live in a world now where people aren't encouraged to have hobbies so much anymore. I feel that we live in a very consumer-driven world where everyone is basically told, if you buy this, you'll feel happier. And that's not true. happiness comes from an achievement of something on your own, is what I think.
Yeah, and like what you just described is like a state of flow that you get into probably by doing these things.
Yeah, totally, yeah. Mm. It doesn't matter what it is, like playing tennis, playing piano, for me, doing tricks or playing a sport. I think anyone who's got a hobby that they're into, I think that that always works. It always makes people feel better.
Mm. And you have a cat now.
Yes, I've just got a cat called Luna. And she is a magical creature who seems to make everyone... Well, as you know, she's been jumping in and out of your bag for the last 20
she
minutes.
She has, yeah.
She seems to make everyone happy as well. Yeah.
She is, yeah. There is definitely something out of this world about her.
But I think pets generally, there's something about them that sort of... they love a bit of a cuddle and we enjoy giving them a bit of a cuddle.
Also because they're so in the moment, aren't they? They're not thinking, oh, yesterday was shit. They're just there with you.
They're not worried about the bills, are they?
Yeah, when she's in my bag, she's in my bag. Yeah. When she's eating, she's eating. She's not like thinking, oh, it was nice in the bag before.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. If only it could be back in the bag again. Jesus. Yes.
So it's true, they kind of force us into the now by watching them. We're like,
we love it, don't we? That's true.
Yeah. What would be your main advice to someone who'd like to succeed as an actor, stand-up comedian, magician?
Well, obviously all three are very different, but all very similar at the same time. I think... There's so much mystery about all three of these things, and there's so much advice, but the real reality is to just do it and do it as much as you possibly can. And particularly in the magic world, there are thousands, you can see these are all my magic books here. There are thousands of books on magic, thousands.
And you've read them all?
Most of them, yeah. My magic book is a bit like crack for me.
Is it?
I love a good magic book.
Wow.
Yeah, I absolutely love them, particularly old magic books, because they're hilarious. They're sort of the language that they're written in, sort of Victorian English.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But I think that the secret is in the doing, definitely. And also... The other thing I wish I could have told myself would be to go for it more when I was younger and not be so afraid. I think like in stand-up, to get good, you need a lot of material. And the only way to get a lot of material is to do a lot of bad material.
Yeah.
Because out of that bad material are where the nuggets of gold are. So it's being prepared to fail a lot more and having the balls to fail. And I think that also transcends to acting as well, that, you know, that ability to commit so much, particularly maybe to sort of an unusual choice, and just absolutely go for it. And don't worry so much if it just goes wrong. Yeah. You know, it sounds overly simple advice, but it's the hardest thing in the world. Yeah.
That is true. I think, yeah. I just thought of people usually pay a lot of money to go to some kind of guru who tells them something very, very simple that they need to hear. But if friends tell you this thing, you just don't believe them, or you think, oh, it's just trite. But if someone, you know, with a history of helping people tells you the same thing, you listen differently. So these things are very true, I think.
Well, there's a lot. There's a lot of things to unpack there, because I think sometimes... there are fake gurus, and I think there are actually one or two real ones, because a real guru knows exactly how to say it in order for you to understand. But there are 10,000 fake ones who really are just giving you confidence, basically. Yeah.
That is true. It made me think of shamans and of the...
That's a bit of a left turn at the lights. No, go on. I used to be really into shamanism.
Because it used to,
one of my other interests back in the day.
Really?
Yeah.
And then it just made me think, because I listened to a podcast today myself, actually, where they talk about, you know, the Oracle of Delphi and this inscription of Know Thyself.
Yes, yes.
That Socrates used in his philosophy, and this kind of, what does Know Thyself actually mean?
Whew.
And apparently, you know,
Wow, you really hit me with the easy questions. My name's Ali Cook. It's not Nietzsche.
Because the guy that I listened to had a very, very interesting point that he made. He said that in our society nowadays, it's usually people think know thyself means like really know my biography, know where I'm coming from. But he says it's less kind of about you. It's more about how you operate as a human being. Like, what biases do I have? And that's just what I thought of when we spoke about gurus and about how to... Yeah, I mean, one of the best pieces of advice is that the only guru you ultimately need is you. You need to find that kind of know thyself, basically.
Yeah, I think that these things are a double-edged sword, because I think that if we all are on a quest to know thyself. But I also totally believe Sigmund Freud when he said that we all live in denial.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So the tricky thing Definitely. In life is trying to unravel these unconscious issues that we all have.
Again, it sounds simple, but it's one of the most difficult things in the world probably to properly know thyself. So I'm not saying you can't just get there. It's a long process. But
there is a brilliant quote from... Not that I'm a huge expert on Carl Jung, but he said we need to make the unconscious conscious. Yeah. Otherwise, we'll spend our whole lives reliving the same patterns and we will call it destiny. And I think that was one of the coolest quotes I've ever heard.
That is what lovely. You could just drop the mic after that.
Could you imagine being so bright that that's the sort of thing you just think of on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, on a podcast.
On a podcast? Can you imagine doing a podcast with Carl Jung? I mean, it would be never-ending. Or Freud.
Yeah. What would you say are the greatest mistakes that people make in your area of expertise?
Okay, I can talk about this more confidently, I think, from a magician's point of view and a comedian's point of view. I think from a magician's point of view is being too fearful. So most magicians are so desperate for success, they literally copy the act of someone else. And instead of trying to invent their own act, which is much harder and takes a lot longer, but ultimately that's where the rewards are. In stand-up, I would say the number one mistake is people go too dark too quickly. The hallmark of open mic comedians is they think they need to be able to do dark humour. Yeah. And actually, dark humour is incredibly hard to pull off. When you're watching someone like Frankie Boyle doing it, the reason he can kind of get away with this sort of stuff, same with Ricky Gervais, is number one, the intellect. And number two, the sheer quality of the writing. And the first thing a good comedian needs to do is come up with a clean 20 minutes that you can do anywhere and just understand how to write. And then as for acting, I'm not quite sure I could know what the number one mistake people seem to do is. I still feel as though I'm still trying to figure it all out.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay. But I think it kind of ties to that too. It's about finding your voice in a way,
mm-hmm.
finding like not bringing all the characters down to your level, but finding something that is uniquely, you know, in you that kind of can tell the story better. I think
mm-hmm.
instead of trying to be really good or something, you know, as trite as that. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't.
Which never works anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I think putting yourself to one side and then just sort of going for it, really. I would say that with all performing, I always find that the best shows or performances I've ever done is, you know, that state of flow you were talking about, where you're just kind of not thinking at all, you're just kind of doing it, and you're not worrying about anything.
Yeah. How has a failure or apparent failure set you up for later success? Do you have a favorite failure?
Wow. Well, most of my relationships, I'd say. And they've really not helped in any area. So I don't think I've ever had a gut-wrenching, terrible failure. I've had a lot of small failures where I just... You know, the problem with all of these sort of disciplines is you have to be self-aware enough to know that you're not there yet and you can always get better. But you do also have to have a confidence in yourself that you know what you're doing. And this is a paradoxical issue.
How do you balance that?
It's very tough. And I would say that I remember John Cleese, he did this talk that he was saying that people who have no talent at all are completely lacking in any self-awareness and they think they're brilliant.
Yeah.
And then quite often very, very talented people are riddled with doubt.
Yeah.
And that's actually what stops themselves. And you need this paradox where you need to have the absolute balls to go for it, but then also understand that the next day you can actually do it better.
Mm.
And I also think that you improve with insight over time. You don't gradually improve. You improve at anything when suddenly you understand a new insight on an emotional level. And that only happens once in a while. I think that does happen no matter what the art form is that you're trying to master.
So it's a non-linear curve, basically.
It's a non-linear improvement. It goes up over time, but it's going up and down, up and down.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, I love that.
Yeah.
Hmm.
But that's just been my experience. Yeah. And I sometimes find that to get better at something, you have to get a bit shitter because you're actually trying to do something in a new way. And then, like, a good example would be when I first started stand-up, I used to do one-liners, you know, like a setup and a punchline, which is kind of like old-school comedy. That's what you would see someone like Jimmy Carr doing, you know, very well-written one-liners. But then to get to sort of more artistic stand-up where you're kind of telling a story and then you're acting out the joke, almost like a sketch like you would see someone like Eddie Izzard doing, that's much harder to do. And when you first start doing it, you suddenly get really bad because you're so used to doing these one-liners that always hit home with an audience. But in order to get better, you have to take that leap and learn that new skill. And you only get there by doing it.
And again, after, like you said, when things turn out to be more shit, mm-hmm. because you're trying new stuff or whatever, do you then have a ritual, a method, anything that helps you, you know, get yourself up again and try again the next day? Or do you have anything you do that,
I think the sheer volume of doing over time is, and the intensity of that.
It's a habit, basically.
For example, I've just been filming a TV series where we're shooting about three scenes a day. Whereas normally I've done films where I might only be in 10 scenes in the whole project. But because of that sheer volume, you don't have time to worry. And I find if you can ever get yourself into that situation where the volume overrides the sort of the needless worrying. And I find that one of the best ways to get better as a live performer is to just book yourself into tons of shows. Because if you're doing a show four nights a week, that those fears just die down. And if you keep relentlessly doing it, I find that over time, you learn to handle that you have good days and bad days, and some days you didn't quite hit it out as good as you wanted to.
And have you ever had a coach or anyone who helped you with that?
In terms of acting or
anything?
Yeah. I, I guess I've you know, I've sort of read books and stuff, and but I think it over. I think again for me, it was the stand-up world that changed me. I often wish I'd have started stand-up in my early 20s rather than my late 20s, because I found that my confidence just grew in every area of my life.
Really?
Yeah, because you get used to failing, because if you write a new joke and it doesn't work, you then suddenly have to deal with the fact that it didn't work. And then once you learn how to handle that, you actually realize that you can fail at most things and find a way to get out of it.
Okay, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
So basically your advice is to everyone, like, do more stand-up.
Yeah. Yeah, become a comedian. I mean, look how well-adjusted comedians are.
Wow. Because I guess the reason I'm asking this is because it's also, I mean, there are a lot of people who make, or it's easy for us all to make the same mistakes over and over again and not learn from falling down. Just, you know.
Yeah.
Well, like the whole Jung thing where.
Yes.
Unconscious stays unconscious, and people are not even conscious of the fact that there is an unconscious.
No. So, well, I do. I mean, I am a huge believer in people, if they feel they need to, seeking out a real therapist. I'm a big believer in that. After I was born, my mum had bad postnatal depression.
Oh.
This is in the 70s. And actually our GP was an early advocate for mental health in this country. And he really helped her. Mm. He really helped her get better. And so ever since, because I was sort of brought up with that, I'm a huge believer that if people need help, that they do seek it out.
Mm.
And not to be scared to do that.
And also kind of getting used to a healthy feedback loop, like you said.
Yeah.
And from what I hear is that you managed to become really good at monitoring yourself after performances, and which I think a lot of people would struggle with, to just find out, like, why did this joke suck, or why didn't I?
Yeah, it's this really hard thing to... And also, you have to separate the product from yourself.
Mm.
And this is a huge problem. There is, there's a skill in being an actor. There's a skill in being a comedian. There's a skill in being a magician or a singer or whatever it is. It's not you, you know, and not placing all of your worth on whether something went well or not. You know, a plumber, say if a plumber goes and fix a boiler and he fucks it up, he doesn't go, oh, I'm useless. You know, yeah. I blew up their boiler. Yeah. Now everyone hates me. You know, they just go, oh, well, I cocked it up. I'll get my friend in to help me tomorrow and see if we can fix it. And you have to have a little bit of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where do you get your sense of worth then from?
Gosh, yeah, this is a heavy interview. I think, again, that self-worth comes from doing things for yourself and it going well over time. And that's why I'm a big believer in hobbies again.
Okay.
So, like, say if your hobby is baking cakes, I think that comes and you get pleasure from doing it. I think that's a good thing. And
so basically enjoying the journey. It's not just about whether the audience or whoever accepts it. It's you love the whole process so much that, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's very much the case. I know, you know, there's a brilliant talk by Bryan Cranston about auditioning. And he talks about that, you know, when you're going for that audition, you're actually just acting. And you may be right or you may not. But you just got to enjoy the fact that you're acting in that moment. And I think that's true of everything, ultimately.
Because you could also think, oh, I'm not getting paid for this. I put a lot of time into it and I'm probably not going to get the job. So it all sucks. Or you're just, oh, this is a free opportunity for me to practice, to get better.
All that other thinking is a total waste of time.
It is.
And everyone's done it.
Yeah.
But it's result driven. But unfortunately, the results come very slowly and very unexpectedly.
A very non-linear fashion.
In a very, very non-linear. Any break I've ever had has always been in the most indirect manner.
Really?
Always. It's always someone I met at a show 10 years ago suddenly said, blah, 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 or something like that. Yeah, I would say so. Mm. Yeah.
In the last 5 years... what new belief, behavior, or habit has most improved your life?
Wow, this is... I feel like this is more like therapy than... Are you training to be a therapist or something? Yeah. there's a few...
Behind the therapy.
I think... I think the one of the biggest changes in my life is having kids. You suddenly realize you're not as important as you thought you were. That's a huge thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the kids suddenly take control and they become the most important part of your life. And I also think kids, just hanging out with your kids is just great. It's just cool. And it changes your perspective on everything. And that's just part of the evolution of growing up, I guess. But I think a couple of other beliefs I used to worry about my work-life balance. You know, where everyone goes, oh God, yeah, you know, you've got to have like a balanced life. You've got to be this and you've got to be that. And I don't think any of that's true at all. I think if you want to be good at something, you have to do a lot of it, and you have to enjoy doing it. You know, I think that's one of those things. And I think one of the other things that I have done to improve my life is I used to not walk very much, and then you know, a few years ago, when everyone talked about getting 10,000 steps a day, I suddenly started doing that. And it took me ages. It took me about 6 months to force myself to do it. I mean, I would walk like 2,000 steps a day. I mean, I was like the ultimate, just like, I'd get up from my bed, sit at my desk, then eat, then go back to bed. Like, I would do nothing. And I find just walking's been quite a big thing for me. Getting out and about, not driving my car very much, if I can possibly help it. It sounds so simple, but...
That's so true, though. Yeah. Especially out in nature.
Definitely, yeah.
It really does something. It's like meditation. You just...
It totally sorts
your brain head out. Just... Yeah, you feel so cleansed after it.
You do, yeah. You? If you can go for a walk in the woods, you know, a few times a week, that is... that's a biggie.
No therapist needed.
No therapist needed. Just a wood.
It's these simple things in life.
It's always the simple things,
What unpopular beliefs do you hold? Where would you say you diverge from the crowd in your work life? I mean, apart from the work-life balance thing, is there anything else you...
Yeah, I was thinking about that. And I think that is probably the main one is I do think that if you want to be good at something, you have to put the hours in. All of my friends that who are really good, particularly my comedian friends, they'll do about 4 or 5 gigs a week. And that is a lot of time and a lot of traveling, and they think nothing of it because that is what it takes. And I think we do live in a world where people are always telling you, you need to do this and you need to do that. And I don't think any of that's true. So I think that's probably my most key, I think, again, the one I've already stressed is that we do live in a world where we're always being sold something. And we all know that that's just a temporary, don't get me wrong, I love going out and buying t-shirts I don't need. Don't get me wrong, like, I love all that. But I also do know that, I think, compared to like my mum and dad's generation, we are, the whole world seems to be shopaholics, it seems. And I do think that that's a huge problem. And I really do think that simple pleasures and simple hobbies for yourself is where people actually get a lot of a sense of achievement from.
Mm. Mm. Why is it important to keep creating good theatre, good films, good magic?
Wowza, what a question. I think it's important because we need a distraction from the story we're already telling ourselves.
Uh-huh.
Because I think that's essentially what entertainment is. It's quite often a break from your own thoughts. You know, when you're really sucked into a great movie or a great book, the number one thing is you're giving yourself a breather from your own life and your own tale that you're already telling yourself. And I think when things are done very, very well, they might inspire you or educate you or warn you, and they might actually seep into your model of the world and expand it. And that would be considered sort of the achievement of great art, I would say.
So again, it's just zooming out and inhabiting a different world for a few minutes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hours, yeah.
And I think on the most basic level, it is escapism. And then on a higher level, it's you're inspiring people or reframing people. Yeah.
Hmm.
Making people see something in a completely new light.
Yeah, well, like you said, if it's a good story or good magic, then it's more than just escapism, probably. It's a kind of a weird indirect education in a way.
It can be, yeah.
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 Mm. Mm.
Not easy to pull off. Not easy
no,
to do.
No, yeah.
I mean, I would say just as a magician, the best show that I did, live show, there was 3 minutes where I really got people, you know, the ultimate aim of a magician is to create wonder. That's the number one thing you can do as a magician over other art forms. And when you hit wonder, when you actually get people with a sense of wonder, they actually go silent and they stop thinking. They don't clap, they don't laugh, they go silent. And there was this one bit in my last show where I could hit it, but out of the hour, it was only for about 2 minutes.
Wow.
And I didn't hit it every night. I would only get it sort of 60% of the time.
Wow. Is that what you're aiming for?
Yeah, that's the ultimate aim of a great magic show.
Wow.
Yeah.
It makes me think of a because I've never done stand up and mm-hmm. I've never really dabbled in magic. When I was a kid, I did like little, you know, fun shows for friends or birthday parties for fun. But in my experience is where when there's a theatre performance and you're in the state of flow with your scene partners and you can kind of sense this atmosphere coming from the audience.
Yes.
Where you kind of you're breathing together almost.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's very rare.
It is rare.
It's very rare.
It's rare.
But when it's there, it's such a meditative and again, it takes you out of your little brain and suddenly there's something greater than you. God, it sounds like almost like a religious something. But
there is like a thing in the air. There is like a magic in the air.
Yeah.
And it happens once in a while and you can't force it either.
Yeah, you can't force it.
You can't force it, yeah. But you also...
Let it go.
Yeah. But there's also that thing about being a pro where even if that's not going to happen, you can still do an excellent...
Oh yeah,
performance.
Oh yeah,
but that little bit of magic in the air that just happens once in a while.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
It's the most amazing thing. Yeah. And what are your plans for the future? What are the main things on your bucket list that are still left after all you've achieved?
Well, I want to do. I think the thing I enjoy the most at the moment is acting. So just want to do more and more. I have written a comedy series about my mum, which I would love to try and get made in one way or another. I think that would be my sort of big achievement, I think.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. So that's, I think that's the big thing on my mind at the moment that I would love to try and pull off, yeah.
What kind of medium do you want to use?
Well, it's written as a comedy series, yeah.
So TV, maybe?
It would be the dream situation would be, it would probably be a TV series, yeah. Yes, yeah. And I think also improving my writing generally. I think, again, I look at writing not dissimilar to, say, magic. I quite enjoy learning and getting better and better and better.
How do you get better at writing? Just by writing more again?
And writing shit tons. Yeah.
Shit tons, yeah.
I think that's the secret of everything. Mm. It's doing a lot coupled with insight, yeah.
Mm. And do you have people who then evaluate your writing, people you trust?
Yeah, it's quite hard to find those people. It is, because you also need someone who gets what you're trying to do. But those people definitely do exist as well. And everyone's trying to look for their own little team all the time, and just trying, you know, different people to run ideas past and stuff like that. But I have two or three friends who are also writers, and sometimes I'll read their stuff or they'll read mine. Yeah.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah.
And where can people find you? What's the best way to get in touch with you?
Probably on either Facebook or Instagram. And it's just Ali_Cook. And that's it.
And your website is?
Oh, well, I tend not to really use my website.
Oh, you don't?
I mean, I've got one. It's alicook.com. But yeah. Nowadays, it's just social media, isn't it?
And I have to say, I mean, I'm sure most people will know your shows. But when I met you in Malta, I had no idea that you're, you know, this big magician as well. I just knew you as Ali, the actor. So when I looked you up, I was like, whoa, this is just mind-blowing stuff.
Well, it's so really weird because it's two very different worlds. Yeah. And so what always happens, I always end up doing magic on set.
Do you really?
Like, yes. Everyone goes, oh, this is Ali. And then about 4 days in, someone's gone, I think I saw you on YouTube the other day. Will you show me a trick? So it ends up being a bit like that.
Are you annoyed by that, or do you enjoy these little moments?
No, but I enjoy it because I don't do as many shows as I used to.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there was sometimes when back in the day I'd be doing like 19 shows a month, and when I wasn't doing a show, I really did want a break. But nowadays, I am obviously doing magic shows, but not as often because of sort of more. There's been much more of acting work coming along. Yeah. So, but no, I enjoy it. You know. Yeah.
Do you ever reveal your tricks to your friends or on set, or is it always?
No.
Never?
Never.
Never.
Not even to my own daughters.
No way. Really?
No. Oh, no.
Really?
I think the truth of it is when people do find out, they're like, oh. You know, it's always the least exciting thing. You know, everyone's like, oh, is that it? Oh, right. You know, the illusion is always, it's the old Wizard of Oz thing. The illusion's always amazing. But if you knew the secret was a bit of blue tack, you would be like, oh. So you can't often really, you can't really reveal stuff. And there's also sometimes there's a lot to reveal as well, that people just get lost if you're trying to explain what's going on. Yeah.
Mm. Fascinating. So fascinating, this thing about illusions, that we love a good story. We love to believe in something that is extraordinary or out of this world, so that by telling them, oh, it's actually this what I do, that people, like you said, it's like, oh.
Yeah, I think that, you know, we were talking about why do we have to have stories?
Secrets.
And
mysteries.
Well, yeah, we need. I think that we need mystery and we need good stories. One of the other reasons is it gives people hope, and I think hope is the cure all.
Is it?
I think so. Yeah, because if someone has the hope, they'll develop the self reliance to solve it. I think that's whatever that thing is. Years ago, I made a documentary on Channel 5 about psychics.
Yeah.
And I had to pretend to be a psychic, and then I would do psychic feats, and then I'd have to explain what was going on. And one of them, I was reading tarot cards at Spitalfields Market. Yeah. And I realized when I was doing these readings that everyone who came to see me, they always had one burning problem. And what they wanted, they needed to get it off the chest, number one. They needed someone to listen. And then number two, they needed someone to give them the hope that they knew how to solve it. And I think quite often that a great story, it can give people a sense of hope.
Yeah. I was just thinking, what do you do if someone actually loses all hope? But yeah.
Well, I would suggest they need to go and see a professional.
Yeah.
I think that's what what someone would need for that. And there are people out there who know what to do. Mm. That's what they do for a living. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Do you actually, it's a bit of a weird question, do you actually, being a magician yourself, do you believe in anything supernatural?
Yeah, I actually do.
You do?
Yeah, because I'm a curious combination because my dad was a bit of a ruthless businessman and my mum owned a New Age bookshop. So I'm this weird combination of the two.
Cognitive dissonance.
Yeah, I just... I think there's a lot of hokum in that world.
Oh, yeah.
But I also feel like there's something. I feel like there's something. And you might say in the way Carl Jung, he did definitely believe there was something. He called it the collective unconscious. So I feel like there is a collective unconscious and these strange moments of coincidence do seem to happen, yeah.
So much we don't know.
Yes.
Which, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. I do think that, yeah.
And there's a certain arrogance and like thinking we know everything.
Oh, God, yeah.
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 Mm.
Yeah, completely, yeah. Yeah.
So a good mixture of being a realist and also a bit of a dreamer.
A bit of a dreamer simultaneously, yeah.
But it's all these big questions where you said yourself that there's usually a kind of simple answer to them, which, depending on the moment in our lives, we kind of need to hear it from, you know.
Yeah, it's
true.
We find
it in a story or from a person that we rely on.
Yeah, I once had this, a guy's written a book called Unconscious Angels that I thought was an interesting idea, that he said that at any one moment, someone, even a stranger, might give you the bit of advice you need to hear, almost as if they're an unconscious angel, giving you a hint of guidance.
That's Jung's thing of synchronicity again, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I actually think that's a great... there's definitely been times in my life where someone has said something and then... And it went in, you know. It could be just the guy in the coffee shop, and then... A month or two later, I was just thinking about what they said, and it did have an impact.
Yeah. It's funny. It's a bit of magic, isn't it? Because you're like, it can just be a coincidence, or maybe there's more to it. But, you know, but maybe this question is less interesting than the fact that it had an impact on you.
Yes.
I think this question of, again, trying to understand everything with your brain and trying to have a theory about everything is maybe less helpful than actually acknowledging that this kind of helped you, maybe.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. Well, Michael Harner, who wrote The Way of the Shaman, he said this. He said that when the West stumbled across shamans in the, you know, in the rainforest, they all tried to psychoanalyze it. And he says, we shouldn't psychoanalyze it. This is their belief system. We should just try it on and feel their experiences rather than trying to imprint how we analyze their world.
Mm.
Yeah.
Hmm. Wise words.
Yeah.
Any parting words, last thoughts you'd like to share with our listeners? Do more stand-up.
Yeah, do as much stand-up as you can.
Yeah.
Even if you don't want to be a comedian. My thing would be, if you are an actor, always have another hobby as well, I would say. Yeah, have another thing that you enjoy doing.
Mm. Great, Ali. Thanks so much.
Cheers, thank you. It was amazing. Very much. Yeah, thanks a lot, yeah.
Thanks for listening. If you find this podcast valuable, it'd be amazing if you could leave a very small or big one-off donation, which helps us with the maintenance costs of the podcast and also helps us continue making it better. The link's in the show notes of the episode, and it's called Buy Me a Coffee. If you cannot donate, you can leave us a short 5-second review on Apple Podcasts and share the episode on social media. It really helps other listeners find the show. And make sure to subscribe to get the next episode. Thanks so much for your support.